right. I've been collecting funny stories about Von Braun mostly. Thanks for calling. Sorry you missed me. I was out briefly, and then I just missed you at work.
Right.
Is now a good time to chat a minute about
sure,
this?
Sure, sure.
Okay, good. It's a great little story.
Yeah.
And it
was true.
Is that right?
Well, ours verified it.
Oh, yes, indeed. Go ahead and give me, let me take some notes here. Tell it to me sort of from the start with the who, what, why, when, where, although I have the gist of the story. It'll be okay to attribute it to you, won't it?
Sure, sure. I think it was in I'm going to say in the 64, 65 time frame.
Okay. Okay.
67 and 70. Anyway, the location is Space Sciences Laboratory.
Right.
Where Ernst Uhlinger was the director.
All right, and that science is plural.
Right.
Okay.
I think that was correct.
Right.
In that laboratory, I was performing, I was doing infrared astronomy research.
Okay.
IR astronomy research.
Right.
Testing out an infrared system, actually called a photometer, I guess.
Okay.
Infrared system.
Right.
In which the detectors are only sensitive in the infrared.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, I was using on a optical bench. I was using a very soldering iron, which when it heats up, emits in the infrared.
Right, I see.
All right, I was calibrating this system, or trying to align it. I wasn't calibrating; I was trying to align the optics in it. And during that time, I was a young research scientist there. And then in comes, and I didn't remember whether it was I knew about it or not. Anyway, it was Wernher von Braun and Ernst Uhlinger,
mm-hmm.
and Gerhard Heller.
Okay.
Hermann Weidner. Hermann Weidner.
Right.
And I swear I can't remember who else was there, but in any case, they were touring Ernst's laboratory and were trying to see what people were doing, because von Braun had this interest in science.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he used to hide, go down the labs and hide some bodies you couldn't find.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, Ernst can tell you about that. Anyway.
And they didn't have any, quote, outsiders, unquote, with them. It was all
internal people.
All internal people, right.
It was the German team. I think with them, I can't remember what Hermann, I think Hermann Weidner was director of science and engineering. I can't remember what his title was. Anyway.
Right. He had become sort of the super, von Braun called him the Pope at one point.
Yeah, right.
He got elected the fellow for most of the lab directors to report to on the first call, anyway.
Yeah, that's how it was, because Ernst was the director of space science.
Okay.
Anyway, with von Braun, all you had to do was mention something scientific, and he loved it. He just get into it, you know, and all kinds of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to mention that this detector that I was working on was called lead. It was made out of a compound called lead sulfide.
Mm-hmm.
And that triggered him because they had used that and he knew about it, and I can't remember exactly the application. I think it was a noise jammer during World War II.
I see.
You'd shine light into it, and it creates a random white noise, and it broadcast that to jam radio signals. But I'm not sure about that. But anyway, and during all of that discussion, he was very...
Yes, I'm familiar with him.
It was rockets are going to the moon or something like that. And I read that, and after working in the coal mines to get money and working in a work college to get my undergraduate degree, and then coming back working in the coal mines, I went to Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Be in physics or mathematics or engineering to be able to work on the rocket system. Anyway, and I was the acting, I think, or maybe even the real director of the student section of the American Institute of Physics at Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia. And we, the physics people and the chemical engineering people pooled their money that they had put together, you know, pay a certain dues, and the school puts some money in there. And we invited Von Braun to come. I don't know whether they paid him money or he came.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he came there. This is like 1958.
Mm-hmm.
59, maybe 59, let's say.
Okay.
I don't think it was 60, I think it was 59.
Right. And is that Huntington or Huntington? Okay, good.
West Virginia, right at the corner of Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Right on the Ohio River. Anyway, Von Braun came and gave this lecture to the combined chemical engineering and physics students and drew the V2, basically, and trajectories. And then at the end, said, I want all of you to come to Huntsville. We're going to the moon and beyond. Never will forget it.
Mm-hmm.
In his German accent.
Right.
So I, in the process of graduating and interviewing, I turned down a position with IBM in Poughkeepsie, New York, at their campus, and headed south to join Von Braun, who all the students during that time had dubbed the Space Pied Piper.
The Space
Pied Piper.
And you mean in the students there where you were?
The students there, they were all saying, well, this guy's a Pied Piper. We have, he's like, you need to follow him wherever he's going.
Right.
So he was sort of dubbed the Space Pied Piper by our little physics reader.
I've read one other reference to that term being applied to him, and I can't remember where it was. But
we just sort of made it up.
Right.
Because he was like a Pied Piper. Anyway, it was, I came down here because of that. And Ernst Stuhlinger used to really push me, and I never did, and I'll be sorry the rest of my life, to tell Von Braun this story, because he said Werner was so proud that he could be able to attract young scientists and engineers and compete with U.S. industry.
Mm-hmm.
And if you told him turn down a job at IBM, that would make his day.
Oh, yeah. Making the same kind of sacrifices really for a cause that he made.
Right, right. And you know, just and turn it down because you sort of believed in the same dream that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a story that Ernst always tried to get me to tell Von Braun, and I never did. I don't know why I did. When I was talking to him, I was so interested in asking him about other things.
Sure, never got around to that. Well, that is interesting. Yeah, you
get another very unique little story. It was about his latter days. We were at one of the picnics, and I don't remember whether he was still the director when they first started the Marshall picnics out there in
mm-hmm.
the same area it is now. He may have come back for it. I can't remember. It was like in the Skylab era, so that was about in the 70s, I guess. And I was, at that time, a manager of a program with the French government in astronomy on the Space Lab.
Mm-hmm.
Skylab, excuse me.
And this would have been early 70s?
Early 70s or something like that. He came to this party, and one of the French his autograph. And none of us had a piece of paper. We looked around all of the plates to get a piece of paper. And this Frenchman had on a beautiful tie in which the lining on the inside was white silky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he took it off and ripped it up the middle. And someone found a felt pen. And Von Braun, we asked him for an autograph and gave him that. And he sat down at the table and autographed the inside silk part of this tie with, you know, the best of luck to you, ATN, blah, blah, blah. Werner Von Braun signed it and dated it. And that's probably going to be the most unique tie in the world.
Oh, I would think so. And he took it with him when
he took him back to France.
Yeah.
I have no idea what ever happened to him.
Hmm.
That was one of the funnier things. Also, I mean, you know, I was saying, my God, I wish I'd have bought the tie off the Frenchman. I mean,
right.
How many people have got their tie signed by Werner Von Braun?
And probably with the inscription and everything.
Oh, yeah.
That is great. Great, Harry. Let me fill in. I think that's almost going to do it here, unless something else has occurred to you. But you were a senior, were you, majoring in either chemistry, chemical engineering, or
physics?
Okay. Right.
I was in the physics. I was majoring in physics.
And you were a senior.
I think I was a senior, yes.
Okay, and what did you say about IBM, that you were entertaining an offer?
Well, I had flown up to Poughkeepsie, New York,
okay,
to interview with them. But, well, I didn't feel it. I was up at Poughkeepsie, New York, and all the time I was walking, it was in January, and I was walking around on the IBM campus there in Poughkeepsie. Snow was shoveled up real high, and you're walking through these corridors of snow, and I kept thinking about Von Braun.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned down a position and came south to join Werner Von Braun.
Hmm. This is, of course, after he had come and made that.
Right, and another little teeny interesting thing about
him.
I don't know where it will be. Yeah, I might as well put this in here.
Sure.
I didn't know quite how to get in touch with him, and
sure.
So I wrote a letter to Senator Byrd. He had just gone to Washington and asked him, could he forward my resume? Because I didn't know how to get in touch with him.
Mm-hmm.
But the marshal didn't even understand at that time how to even fill out an application. And so he sent that from Washington. Came down to interview and took the job. But, but that was sort of a little twist. And I didn't really, when Von Braun was there, I was totally captivated by his speech. But also, you know, I had an opportunity to interview with IBM, and I did that. But then I never will forget. I kept thinking, I got to go south with Von Braun. I don't want to be up here in this snow.
That is great. So you joined Marshall Center, what year?
July the 3rd, 1961.
Hmm, okay.
And,
1961, all right. In what capacity?
Well, I worked in what was then called the Research Projects Laboratory, which Aaron Stuhlmer was the head of. We were in a little building right with Von Braun where it's now the Army Library building, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
4484, 82 or something like that. And later moved to the Space Sciences Laboratory.
Sure.
But I came there and went to work for them in 1961.
Right. And you had your bachelor's?
In
physics.
In physics. And actually I was working on a master's and a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished up my master's at
Troy Van,
West Virginia.
West Virginia.
And October the 20th, 1935.
Okay.
I'm an old man.
Watch it there, because I go back. I was born in 34.
So I was, I'm all out Hick, Homer Hickman, okay? Right. I was in a school that had 12 rooms and 12 grades.
Is that right?
Well, there was more than that. There may have been 15 rooms and 12 grades, but it was very small. And that's where I first read Willie Lay's book and started me on a career out of the mountains.
So, I just bought a book by Willie Lay. Well, actually, he did the introduction and something else for it. Commentary, I think they called it. John Shaver, Shaver's Bookstore, he's got some space books he's, I think, selling on consignment from people. And I'm just lately kind of building up my little space book collection. But there was Willie Lay. I didn't own anything by him. And there was another book by Herman Oberth. And I bought that, too.
I have a book. I have some documentation here, which is not mine, and I need to get back to it. At the time that I went to work here, there was a person in charge of what's now the House Space Sciences Committee. It was Flip of Ian and now Ronnie's in. Bud Kramer's in. Named Dr. Kenneth Heckler.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Heckler was my one of my teachers at Marshall University. When I was, sort of a long story, but I was assigned by NASA several assignments to Senator Byrd's office and others to be a liaison. And Ken Heckler loaned me some books that he had, some things that he had written, which has a lot of the history of the Space Sciences Committee in that. I looked at it several years ago, and I keep needing to get that back to him.
Mm-hmm.
He told me keep as long as you want to. But that may, I mean, look at that. That may have some historical stuff about how in those early days, the Congress went about forming NASA and all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah. Okay, let me see. You retired when?
94. God, I don't remember when I go downstairs.
Oh, that's all right. I'm asking more questions than the material I'm going to use. But how old were you when you read the Willie Lay book, did you say?
I was about 16.
Now, did that turn you on to science and technology or rocketry and space in particular?
Well, it sort of turned me on to science and technology because there wasn't any rocketry in space. It's just,
sure,
it just became fascinating. I went away and went to a work college in North Carolina, a small school in Asheville called Warren Wilson College, because that was the only way I could get a degree. You worked half a day, went to school half a day. And when I came back in 58, then I still had the book, and then I started reading about NASA being formed.
Mm-hmm.
So then the connectivity our decision to fight von Braun, then all this that I had read, then the connectivity came back to me that, there was some, because there wasn't anything, in 55 there wasn't, there was a nice treatise and it was fascinating, but there wasn't any way to, and I had just an associate arts degree when I came back from Warren Wilson, and it was at that time at Marshall that I think was when I started talking about rocket and that type of stuff, people said, well, you got a major in physics.
Right.
The associate arts was just a general 2-year degree.
Mm-hmm.
All the colleges I went to offered, a small college up the mountain.
Sure.
So then that's when it started, von Braun, basically, he himself solidified in my mind, and there was, I think there was three of us, all of our class, that passed up jobs and came down here. The other two have gone on to other things, but there was three of us came down here.
Mm-hmm. A little coincidence, too, that you left Marshall University and came to Marshall Center.
Marshall Space Flight Center. Two different Marshalls, but I think they're related, I think.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know that, but I'm not sure.
Okay, and lastly, did you say Widener had on, was it a suit coat or a sport coat?
No, it was a full
coat
suit. It was a full suit. Oh. I mean, that's something I'll never forget. It was a dark brown, not really real dark brown, but it was a brown suit. Daniels, and Mr. Reynolds would always have and they'd sit there and drink, sip on their Jack and smoke cigars and talk about the good old days and, you know, government and everything else. And it was during one of these discussions that Sparkman told Reynolds that he had a problem he had to solve, and that was what to do with Redstone Arsenal. And that, so I guess it must have been before 55.
Mm-hmm.
And that he had a proposal given to him to bring a bunch of Germans from Texas up there and revise the place. But he was looking at that, and Reynolds, according to this, Mr. Hunt, asked him, well, what do they do? And he said, well, they build rockets. And he said, what a rocket? He said, rockets. And so they evidently discussed what a rocket is and what it does.
Mm-hmm.
About the Germans and World War II and all that stuff. And Reynolds then said to him, well, what do they build them out of? And he said, well, I think they build them out of metal. And he said, well, can they build them out of aluminum? Sparkman said, I'm sure they can. And so he said, Hunt says that Reynolds picked up the phone and called the president and told him, let's get them Germans. I want to give them the aluminum to build those rockets.
Is that right?
Now, I can't prove that, and to put that in print would be difficult, but I was sitting there listening. That Bill Lucas, I think, he may remember a little bit of the details, because Lucas had a totally different view of why the Germans came here.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I remember he and, I know Bill will remember that he and Hunt disagreed on. They got in a pretty damn hot argument, and when we left the building, I think in Hunt's airport, he's really, those metals guys are always tough anyway. He's a tough old engineer, and he said to me, I really, really pissed off your boy there, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, I said, I don't think it's at all. I said, Dr. Lucas can be mean if he wants to, but he has his own version. And he said, I tell you what, here's my number. If he fires you, I got a place for you. But that may be something I can get Bill and go over again. And I think it was one or two other people in the room. Maybe get something that we can verify. But that was a funny incident of a reason I never heard before.
Hmm.
And whenever I asked Hunt, I said, have a big facility over in West Alabama, aluminum facility.
Right.
I said, yeah. And then I never did quite understand the reason why they didn't name it the John Sparkman facility, they named it Lister Hill facility.
Mm-hmm.
Never understood that part of it, but whether he was just having fun or it was the truth, I don't know.
Sure.
He was one of these guys that Lucas was so damn stiff, and this guy was, you know, also a rough, tough old metals guy. He was just doing a number. I never had a way of verifying that. But it was
right.
One was interesting.
I've got some documentation, a piece of correspondence I came onto from a W.G. Billy Reynolds on a Reynolds Metals or Reynolds Aluminum letterhead, and his title is given. I don't have it under me. I don't think it was president or CEO, but it could have been president, but I think it was more like vice president for development, or, you know, research and development or something, or engineering and development, whatever. And it, from the content of the letter, was real clear that he had palled around closely with Von Braun. I mean, he wrote him as a friend.
Uh-huh.
So there was...
Well, there may have been something to all that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe somewhere in the Reynolds memoirs we could probably verify
mm-hmm.
that particular thing.
Mm.
I guess in that time it had to have been true.
Yeah. I guess so.
Anyway, I don't know if we can publish that or not, but that's a damn interesting story.
It is. Maybe later or some other work.
Yeah, really.
But, okay, and I should identify you as Harry, that's what you go by, Atkins, A-T-K-I-N-S.
Yes, sir.
All right. And let's see, I don't think I will, there's not any point in my going into it, but you are with Raytheon now.
Correct.
Right. Yeah.
That's you. Okay. You can tell, you can say that.
Okay.
With Raytheon Systems Company, marketing manager for Raytheon Systems.
All right, let me jot that down. Marketing manager with Raytheon Systems Company.
In Huntsville.
Right. Okay. All right. Good. Well, I really appreciate your sharing this with me, and it's going to go right into the book.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to tell you, because it was something that was so funny that I'll never...
Yeah.
That was like, you know, hell, I don't know, 40 years ago, or 35 years ago, whatever. Man, I'll never forget.
I'll bet. That is a great story. I hope the book will get out, I know it's, God willing, going to get out late this summer. I had been shooting for July, but I just continued interviewing, and I've missed that little window, but either in August or very early September, and it'll be right in there, and I thank you again.
You should put in there. Not that I'm lying to you about, but it was confirmed by Ernst Stuhlinger.
Oh yeah, he was sitting. Dave and Ernst and I were sitting in the lobby of the Times here at midday when Dave repeated your story there, and Ernst saying yes, that's the way it happened, and just grinning real big. And
yeah, it was funny.
Right. I don't believe,
those of us who saw a different picture have to present that picture.
Right. Well, I've got hundreds of people's recollections and memories and tales about Von Braun, and I tell you, it's 99.9% positive and glowing and with specifics, you know, that make it very, very credible.
That's correct. And, like I said, we dubbed him, our students at the time, and I brought that with me, the Pied Piper of Space, Space Pied Piper or something, I can't remember what it was.
Right.
Because he was so effective at generating enthusiasm with the people he came in contact with. So, anyway, I write the book, and we'll let history stand where it is and let this other guy write his trash if he wants to.
Right, and not call too much attention to it.
No, just hey, if you think it's appropriate, write it. One other thing that I cannot prove, but I remember one time I was over in the Astronics Lab with a guy from London, England, hearing him and Helmut Pfaff, who had a dueling scar, a real dueling scar from Heidelberg, talk about the bombs, the V-2s hit in London, and Helmut, and he had and there were two guys that were living, but there wasn't any, animosities. Anyway, hey, it's been really good talking to you, and whatever I can contribute. I know a lot of other little things, but hell, it's none of it, third, fourth.
They can't compare with the blazing, blazing suit.
With a Herman Winder suit.
Oh, that's great.
It actually didn't catch on fire because it just burned a hole in it.
You were sure.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks for your help.